Welcome to MSU Today on AM 870 WKAR. I'm Russ White. At 6 past the hour following the latest news, Michigan State University President Luana K. Simon and Spartans Athletic Director Mark Hollis talk with Tom Izzo.
You know, and I really got a fun team. You know, I've had a few injuries. I just think I'm starting to see the culture we build is starting to pay dividends, but they're young, but they're going to be good.
Then Simon and Hollis talk with MSU's teaching, learning, and technology guru, Jeff Grable.
What the learning environment of the future is going to look like is going to be enhanced by those technologies, but they're not magic. They're not going to make things radically different.
MSU Today begins at 4:06.
But we're never going to survive.
WKAR.
This is MSU Today on AM 870 WKAR. Here's Michigan State University President Luana K. Simon and Spartans Athletic Director Mark Hollis with Tom Izzo.
Well, it's really our pleasure to welcome Hall of Fame now coach Tom Izzo, but a great friend and also a Spartan for life as part of our theme for homecoming. So, Tom, it's really great to have you. It must have been a whirlwind sort of summer with the Hall of Fame and the Dean Smith Award and those kinds of things.
You know, it really was. It was hopefully it doesn't change anything, but it in a way, but it was, whirlwind, still kind of surreal. As Mark can attest to, you know, you get to somewhere where you, no different than either one of you in your professions, but where you idolized or looked up to people, and now all of a sudden you're kind of part of that group, at least in the way it is. But, you know, it's still good to be back home. Homecoming was a, you know, tough football game, but an incredible crowd. Got to meet a lot of great people. You know, I think we're getting more and more people back here. Mm-hmm. I'm starting to, you know, I met people that came through our place that had been 30, 40 years since they came back. And I think that's a tribute to you and what we're doing here. Just the between the building and between the way the place looks,
it's a special place.
It is.
No doubt. Going back to the Hall of Fame and having the opportunity to have traveled to Springfield and be part of it, what I was mesmerized with, I guess, I've been to a lot of College Football Hall of Fames, the National Football Foundation. This was everything about basketball. It was men and women. It was global. It was the NBA and it was college. It impacted the game and not just a segment of the game. And that was really, you knew it, but you didn't know it until you went there and you saw the individuals that were part of that event of the magnitude of this. It was almost, the setting was almost like a movie. In what the building looked like and what the approach of individuals getting off buses or out of cars and coming in. But it was all a basketball.
You know, it's funny you said that. I didn't think about it till I saw Nancy Lieberman there. And that's what she was saying. She goes, you know, the one thing about our hall, it incorporates everybody, and it is more global even, right. You know. And the respect factor is the same. It's like, we're all in this together, the men, the women, the Europe, all the different countries. That did make it kind of cool, especially having Yao Ming in there too as a guy. Cheryl Swoops was absolutely great. She added a lot to it, so it was good.
The other component you would see is you'd see individuals like our own Mark D'Antonio, but also broadcasters, as they would see Shaq or Yao Ming or others, jaws would drop. And you would see individuals that are revered in their own world just being in a state of amazement of the individuals that were there.
Like you said, Mark, he was saying, did you see, you know, Lenny Wilkins was there, and Yao Ming, did you see how big he was? And it was kind of a fun setting, but as we decided in our Midnight Madness, it was great to celebrate, and now it's time to get back to work and put
that
aside.
We just had to change the color of that coat.
Yeah, it was a little weird, you know. You think of the halls; they got the yellow for football, and ours is
the color of a basketball.
It's color of a basketball. That was the theory behind it. I, I think it went a little brighter than that. You know, I don't know. I would agree.
Let me stay with it. What did your mother think? You know, I mean, I know that, you know, so just, you know, from, you know, these Youper roots,
yeah,
and thinking about, what did your mother think?
You know, I think that was the best part for me. I did get to share it with the people that have been very instrumental in any success I've had. And for my mother, you know, going through the loss of my father in December, and being able to be there healthy at 90 and walking the streets, and for her, to see her get to see some of the people that, even if you weren't a sports nut, some of those people were just global people that you knew, and watch her get pictures with Shaq or something, and she actually enjoyed it. That was the thrill of the night. Yeah, that's a good question.
And talking to you and Shaq and others, I think the night was so surreal for the individuals that were inducted, that, and there were many people that came back, some of which Shaq didn't know or you didn't know, right, were even there until after the event was over, but former student athletes, former friends. It was really refreshing to turn around and see individuals that on their own dime,
yeah,
made their way to Springfield to be part of that because of the impact that you've had on their lives.
And then you had the Dean Smith Award. I mean,
you know,
what,
yeah,
can I tell you,
was,
right?
That was, not knowing as much about it since it's a newer award, but John Thompson was a recipient. But,
right,
you know, that very day, Mike Krzyzewski called and said, this stands for what you want it to stand for. The other ones is about wins and losses. This is about the integrity and what you did. And I think there's truth to it. Not that the others didn't have some integrity issues with it too, but I think what he was saying was true. And so that was an honor. That was a thrill.
So now you have to go play basketball.
I got to hang the orange coat in the closet.
I put that in the ring in a box, and I told my wife, you know, either very old or death. That's what we'll celebrate that with from now on. But, yeah, you know, and I really got a fun team. You know, I've had a few injuries, but I got as good a group of freshmen, some that I would like because they're high flyers and they're great players, some that you would like because they're phenomenal students. And you know, I got a couple guys that are smarter than the coach. That's not always safe, but it is good. And I just think that I'm starting to see the culture we build is starting to pay dividends because people that are the superstars are coming in and they're conforming to the culture. The good players are coming in and doing that. And I don't know where it'll take us. We got an incredible schedule early, but I really like this team. I mean, last year's team was, you know, was special because of just a bunch of good guys that worked hard. This team has worked this hard. It's got as good a guys, more talented freshmen than I had last year. But they're young, but they're going to be good.
They look like they're having fun together. When I've seen them on,
yeah,
the sidelines or before,
yeah,
the parade, there's a sort of a,
you know, they go to the football games together. They do everything together. This summer we were on the road, you know. It was, we're going here and there together. We're going to the movies, you know, just last weekend. I mean, it's nice because in football it's harder to do with the numbers. But
right,
in basketball you can do that. But I can say in my years that doesn't always happen. Mark, you know,
yep,
that. And that is a good start, you know, just like for us. I mean, I think what's made this place special for me, especially in the last 10 years, is that we've really worked together from top to bottom, and I don't think that gets enough credit. You know, staffs are in credit. We're your staff. We got our own staffs, assistants, and people that work for us. Mm-hmm. You keep them all together, and you get a chance.
When you look at the game itself, the Big Ten and the MAC, because the officiating is done together, came out with an announcement on review of block charges.
Yeah.
How do you see that impacting the game? Do you think it's going to slow it down? Is it going to make it better?
Yeah, I worry about a couple things. You know, I worry that we want to call too many fouls. Everybody wants this freedom of movement so nobody can guard anybody anymore. I don't think that's right. I think the physical play should be taken out compared to the way it used to. But the touch fouls that we had last year where, mm-hmm, the games are going 2.5 hours and nobody likes that. TV doesn't like it. The fans don't like it. The coaches don't like it. And the players. The hardest part about our sport compared to all the others, and Susie and I talk about this a lot, is we actually can lose players. I mean, hockey can lose a player for 2 minutes. If it's serious, 5 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
But we can lose them for the game. And more importantly for us, if a guy gets two fouls, if woman gets two fouls in the first, 10 minutes of the game, now you're playing different for the next 30. You're either on the bench
right.
or you're playing different. And I think what we're going to have is the best players aren't on the floor as much. The problem is parity is a lot better nowadays. Mm-hmm. Nobody can have the great backups, as we learned at Alabama football. You know, as soon as you're not playing as a quarterback, you're transferring. Well, we have that too, mm-hmm. even worse. And so if you get down into your second-tier people, I don't think your product's going to be as good. So I think you, as the chair of your thing, better wrap your arms around it a little bit.
No, I don't think there's any question. I think anytime you look at rules and you look at voting, you have to look at what the infrastructure of that process is. And
exactly.
There's pockets of institutions. There's 65 in football. There's 120 in football at a little broader perspective. 350 in college basketball. And the rules are voted on by the 350. And there are some institutions that like physical play, and there are many that like freedom of movement.
Well,
at an extreme, I'm talking. And
you get a situation where the smaller schools that aren't going to have as big of players or as athletic of players, I mean, just the nature of the beast, would rather those rules be curbed down. And so it is difficult. It's a difficult task. But when it starts affecting the game from a standpoint of the product you put on the court, then I think, we got to look at it a little differently.
You got to take a good look at it, no doubt.
What we need is more delays. There are enough timeouts. Well,
there's something that you and I agree with.
I think there's great.
They could go back and review all the block charges in the 2.5 minute timeout.
Reset the game. Reset the game and do something. Because I think people are very uncomfortable about all of this delays in the game. And then you add the free throws along with it. I mean, it's not the game is happening, but it sort of has this moment to it that it really has lost what I think is some of the specialness of basketball.
Yeah, I think from a flow of game, from watching the games, I would argue football and basketball, we need to do our due diligence of looking at both of those sports because they're so dictated by television on what they look like and how we can speed up the game.
But with, that's why people are more and more, taping, getting a replay, but the excitement I think of collegiate sports are the people who can participate with the team,
with
the event in the stadium,
and having some flow to it,
and because that's what people do regularly. I mean, there are a few regular NBA fans, I'm sure, but there's a lot of, it's not hard to get an NBA ticket,
right?
Except for the game,
Right.
Here we have a lot of people who come every game
yep.
with their families as a part of their ritual, and we have to preserve that for college sport, I think.
Let's talk about scheduling just for a minute. It's
was there an insane coach award for this?
Coach AD.
I think one of the great parts of our program is to have the opportunity to participate in some of these national events with Kentucky, Kansas, and Duke. And it's something that's done annually, and it's probably looked at as the best event that goes on a season-by-season basis. The ACC Challenge has turned into something, but those are two events that are pretty much givens that you're going to play in at a high level. And then choices are made. Choices are made about events that give you an opportunity to play more games, the multi.
I was going to say, even those two – we can't change, nor would I ever want. If I had to play them back-to-back, the Tournament of Champions with Duke, Kentucky, and Kansas is the second most watched night of basketball other than the Final Four. I mean, that's good for us. It's good for you, Luana, for Michigan State, for our alums.
Yeah.
That's one of those unique events.
Yeah.
But you almost have to play in one of those tournaments in Maui or Bahamas because of the game difference and all that to get an extra game or two. And
then your belief in
I think you guys got to look at that one.
No, I agree.
Because I think ADs, I think we're losing money. We're spending money and losing it to promoters, and sometimes I struggle with that personally.
Yeah. And then your memory maker philosophy of doing something for the men and women of the armed forces and going to Pearl Harbor. And those are all things that are important in their individual aspects. And then it's developed a schedule. I mean, it's going to be a schedule that the student athletes won't forget.
Well, this is going to be the weirdest of all 13,600 miles in 20 days, you know, right. And the biggest worry.
You track that down, huh?
Yeah. I think it's 13,625 if you want the truth. But then you got, you know, you got school. Yeah. You got a couple weeks before finals. You got Thanksgiving in there. You know, it just worked out that way, too. This was not the norm, you know.
Right.
Like, I know you and I still want to go to the Air Force Academy and to Army. You know, I think there has been – those have been so good for the players and I think so good for Michigan State and everything. Mm-hmm. But the travel makes this a little more insane. It's just the way it works out. As you say, when you have those two staples of the ACC Challenge and the Tournament of Champions, you cannot change the dates of those.
Right.
So it sometimes creates a dilemma for you and me and – and yet, you're right, you know. It's still the same philosophy we've had. We get beat up a little bit early.
Yep.
And if we have cocky freshmen, they'll be uncocky.
Right.
And
you know where you stand.
And you know where you stand. You know what your strengths are. You know what your weaknesses are. This philosophy has worked for us.
Yep.
Some years it's been a little sketchy, you know. I think one year we were 3-7, and the roof almost caved in, and we lose to Wisconsin in the last play or we win the Big Ten that year, we bounce back and get in the tournament. You know, I mean, it's what we've done to build our program and our culture. It ain't broke, so I don't think we're changing it.
Right.
I agree.
You know, along with that, the Big Ten has some scheduling challenges. Part of that has to do with the number of weeks this year, but we're going to have that in the future with moving the tournament to New York City, and that will be played a week earlier. One of the solutions that came out this year was moving some games into December, which is a challenge from our perspective as far as allowing student athletes to go home over the holiday break.
Yeah.
When would you what's the earliest you would like to see or consider having conference games
played?
Well,
we really do have some issues there because we have different schools that have different final exam
periods.
And it really creates a problem. But I've just never agreed. I mean, it's one thing Jim and I don't agree on is that you're starting the biggest kickoff. And there's been times that we opened the season with Illinois and Wisconsin when the three of us were picked to win it.
Right.
During the biggest part of bowl games, there's no hype for it. There's nobody cares. The Christmas thing is bothersome. This year we planned the 27th. There's probably a good chance that on Christmas Eve we'll be practicing.
Mm-hmm.
And because we got a road game on the 27th. And
right.
I would rather play it early in December. I think if we're looking at student welfare, if you took all the things they get, a parent would still rather their kids home at Christmas for some period of time. The coaches would still rather be home at Christmas. You look at welfare for everybody, there should be a 5-7 day dead period
at that holiday period,
if you ask me.
It's not only good for the holiday issue. It is good for just mental break.
Mental break.
I mean, you take the end of the semester, from my perspective,
yes.
For many of these students,
it's taxing.
It's a huge transition, whether people, you know, were the 4.0 student or the 3.0 student in high school. It is a huge transition.
Right.
And having some family mental Yeah, and also some fun time together that isn't around going to a gym and shooting or any requirements. I think people are talking about dead periods, but they tend to put them, you know, in the weirdest spot possible, whereas the holidays would be a really good spot to put them.
Yeah, we put them after the season, for example, or sometime in the summer.
Yeah.
And you're right, you know, that in-between period would be awesome. And, you know, I don't know if we're going to have to cut back a game or two. I don't know what we're going to do because it's hard to fit it all in there. I don't think you should start earlier. We got the longest season as it is. But if we're really looking at what's right for the student athlete, you're right, Lana. The break academically, that's what we have,
physically,
a break. And then you look at physically and mentally. And then just, you know, you try to preach the family atmosphere in that. And you got to have families be around to do that. So That is going to be challenging. I think, again, you know, you talked about 350.
Mm-hmm.
We can't get 14 people
to agree
with something. And I think that's got to be really looked at and maybe taken out of our hands to a certain extent because, you know, if we have a lot of things that are taken out of our hands for the student athlete, to me, this should be on the top of that list.
Right.
A break, you know, whether the holiday, just a break, a dead period. You know, they do it in business around the country. They, you know, our profs get a break here. I think it would be healthy for the student athlete.
I think to close off the conversation here, I think you announced you're going to coach another 10 to 20 years at Midnight Madness.
And, you guys will have
me. And the high energy level that you...
I'll have my cane ready.
I might be right with you, but...
The high energy level it takes to be a college basketball coach, you don't seem to miss a beat. I mean, you look energetic,
you know,
ready to go.
I do feel good right now. I really do. I think I have to learn. Somebody asked me, I did an article for... USA, I think it was USA Today or one of the major news network, and they talked about that. You know, what would you do now if you could look back in 20 years ago? And it'd be a good question for you. And I said I'd like to have a little more balance, but that's my fault. You know, it's just it's not that I would work any less to get whatever job I had done. I'd try to work more efficiently and try not to let the little things get in the way of the efficient part of my job. And easy to say now, you know, you and I, Luana, kind of started the same way, and really so did you. You know, we weren't ADs or presidents or coaches somewhere else smaller to work our way in.
Yeah.
We got thrown into the lion's den, and it's been a one heck of a den, but there was no adjustment periods. You know, when you're at Northern Michigan as the head coach and then you move up to a small and then move up to the big time, you get some, when you're just thrown in, you're going 100 miles an hour, and rightfully so. And both of you have done the same. So the three of us are sitting here with the exact same resumes in that respect. But, you know, I think it's what's been good for me, especially these last lot of years, is, you know, we've had the leadership on top, and I'm not blowing smoke here, but it's been such a good relationship. We're doing a radio show together. We have meetings together. Right. You know, you were my roommate in college here when I was came as a grad assistant. So there's a relationship, and yet we all understand we all have jobs to do. If you don't do yours right, you're probably not going to be here. If you don't do yours right, you're not going to be here. And if I don't do mine right, I'm not going to be here. But together, our chances are much better. And that's what's been so much fun about this job for me, and why it's more relaxing now than it was even 15 years ago.
Well, it is. But we're so proud to have you as part of Team MSU. You're really a special person. And it's been interesting to watch all of us in many ways grow in our role, because we're not doing it the same way we did it. Oh. Eons ago, and the students are different, and all that we have to sort of adjust to. But they keep us both focused and alive.
Very good point. And, you know, alive means we're having to change how we do it. Me with the social media a little bit. Everybody else with their stuff, but not change our principles. Right. And I think we've all three done a good job. So we got some more years left in us.
Let's go win some championships.
There you go.
We're gonna have fun.
Thanks.
Take care.
Thanks, guys.
That was Tom Izzo talking with his bosses, Spartans Athletic Director Mark Hollis and Michigan State University President Luana K. Simon. To hear the conversation again, please visit SpartanPodcast.com. This is MSU Today on AM 870 WKAR. MSU Today on AM 870 WKAR. Michigan State University President Luana K. Simon and Spartans Athletic Director Mark Hollis now welcome Jeff Grable to the program. Jeff is MSU's Associate Provost for Teaching, Learning, and Technology. Here's President Simon.
We're really pleased to have Jeff Grable, who is a faculty member at Michigan State. As my new godchild would say, a professor at Michigan State. who really is playing an extraordinary role in terms of the development of technology-enhanced teaching and learning on campus, not simply instruction, but teaching and learning. And I was fortunate to know Jeff when he was coming to Michigan State and really was engaged in writing in the digital era, in the digital environment. And so that's been a while ago that you were a pioneer in thinking about that well before all of us were, even me, were dealing with the technology. So it's really a pleasure to have you. As we're thinking about the future, everyone thinks about technology and teaching, and they immediately go to MOOCs and online courses and the traditional kinds of things. So if you and I are, we're three of us are talking and we're imagining the learning environment of the future at Michigan State, what does it look like?
That's a difficult question. It's a great question.
Presidents get to ask difficult.
Yeah, you get to ask questions like that.
Yeah.
So I have some experience with learning technologies, and they seem to be the driver of a lot of conversations right now. And the research group that I was a part of, we studied them, we invented them, we spun a company out of the university out of our own research, our own learning technology. And so I've been hanging around both the university side and the ed tech entrepreneurial side for a little bit more than a decade. And we see a lot of magical thinking around that. And what the learning environment of the future is going to look like is going to be enhanced by those technologies, but they're not magic. They're not going to make things radically different, by which I mean really high quality learning experiences for our students are engaging experiences, they're caring experiences, they're experiences that challenge students, that inspire students to achieve their dreams. They're highly interactive and they're highly engaging. That's what matters. And the question then about the future learning environment is, how do we construct more of them on this campus, on every campus, and how do we construct them with greater fidelity so their students are more likely to have an engaged and caring experience? And what is the value add of digital technologies to that? And I think there are spaces in which digital technologies add tremendous value in areas of feedback in particular, connectivity, engagement, and communication. But that can happen in a very intimate face-to-face experience, and it can also happen in a very large experience. So that's not maybe the answer that a lot of educational technology people give. They usually give a sort of, this is going to change everything. We're all going to learn in MOOCs. All the universities in the world are going to go away, because if you could take an online course from MIT, why would you take any course from, you know, directional state university? But the fact of the matter is there's lots of good reasons why you would take that course close to home with people who care about you. And there's also lots of reasons why those massively online courses are terrible learning experiences for people. So that's my non-answer answer to that question.
No, I want to sort of, because what one of the things that your answer reflects is the sense that it is really the values of Michigan State, and there's more to this than content.
Absolutely.
And MOOCs are good at content. I mean, I try to do some in Apple, in the iTunes world of going through. I've done a couple of Coursera sort of things that in weird topics that, and it even for somebody who I think reads well, which I would give myself credit for reading well, and for having some sense of analytical skills, the you sort of sample them, but you don't really always engage in what's behind the content. Mm-hmm. I've learned a bunch of facts I can throw out in lots of ways, but there's more to learning than content.
Absolutely. I'm actually glad you brought that up, because one of the questions I posed to the people who work with me last week is, what would ed tech conversations look like if we didn't begin from the assumption that education equals content delivery? And so for those who are listening to us, when they read articles and they hear stories about the future of education and the role of technology, listen very carefully how they talk about and characterize education. They do tend to understand it only as content delivery, when in fact learning is not about content delivery, and what we do on this campus is not fundamentally about content delivery. It's much more complex. It's much richer. We add much more value to the learning experience than content delivery, which is why a lot of people, when they look at MOOCs, see them as reinventing a publication model, not really a learning or an educational model.
I think the language is also important, because you talk about learning, not about teaching.
That's right.
And it's often sort of the transaction of teacher to student, and as if it's also a sort of a gigantic receptacle, and it's just sort of even loaded up with all of these these pieces of information, sometimes analytical skills, but it's really about how you take learning and make it a common and shared objective.
I think that's one of the most innovative things we're doing at Michigan State right now, is that very simple shift of not beginning with teaching but beginning with learning. And so when we ground all of our innovation conversations around learning and technology and, frankly, teaching in learning, and if we begin with learning and if we begin with student experiences and if we commit to understanding them and making them more valuable, then that opens up a whole set of conversations very early in a design or innovation process that are very difficult to have later. And it opens up possibilities. It makes difficult conversations easier. And frankly, intellectually, it has us focused on the right things. If we're focused on what learning looks like, what kind of learning we want to facilitate with these human beings in these environments, then we're in the right direction in terms of creating an on-campus and an online experience for Michigan State students that's going to be exceptional.
When I hear technology and learning, my mind kind of jumps to a desocializing the learning process. Can you help me understand how it doesn't, when you go across campus, some of the greatest opportunities are to be with students and listen to them talk about issues. And I know
That's right.
Technology is involved in that process.
Well, it can be.
Can be.
Yeah.
Help me with individuals that may think technology equates to a desocializing in the learning environment.
Well, I think sometimes it can. And so a poor deployment of educational technology would, in fact, desocialize the learning experience for students and deprofessionalize teacher work. And so the forms of technology added to education that bother me a great deal are the kinds that do depersonalize and desocialize the learning experience for students. So if what we're doing in individualizing learning experiences, for example, is setting students in front of a computer and letting them engage with the computer, I'm not interested in that.
Mm-hmm.
I'm interested in high-quality feedback, and machines can help us a lot with that.
Sure.
But if we go back to where we started, really value add of a digital technology is we get more communication, we have more interaction, there's more socialization, there's more opportunities for collisions.
Mm-hmm.
And the students who work with me know that I believe deeply in collisions. And in fact, the innovation hub that we're building is engineered, the space and the work patterns that we're building is engineered, is focused on engineering collisions. And so in my classroom, I want students bumping into each other and into ideas more frequently, not less frequently. And so socializing the learning experience is a priority. And if a technology helps us with that, mm-hmm. then I'm interested in it. If it gets in the way, I'm not.
But one of the things that comes, I think, with this is how do you use there are sort of two things. How do you take the time that people spend together in a thing called a class, a scheduled class, and make it not about the content?
Right.
Because you have to learn a collision philosophy. Let
right.
me use that your phrase. Because people are not coming to us learning that way.
Right.
They're merely more often sitting in a desk, doing the computer, you know, three math problems and you're done,
mm-hmm.
Piece. And then they think about these intellectual and service engagements as something outside the classroom.
Right.
And that language is, and I learn more outside the classroom
right.
than I did inside the classroom. So we have to sort of figure out how to teach people to work with those collisions and not be uncomfortable with those collisions. Because I hear the word uncomfortable, so I want to be more comfortable, and I don't want people to be comfortable because these collisions can be uncomfortable in terms of ideas and people and ways of thinking about things. But we also, to go back to Jeff's word, have to do it in a caring environment.
Right.
There's a difference between caring to make people comfortable and caring to make them able to learn more.
That's right.
And that's one of, I think, the biggest challenges higher education has in this current environment now.
Yeah.
And but you have it with your student athletes.
I have with student athletes, I have with my own children. I mean, it's you know, a parent today trying to help their children learn is a challenge, and yet you want to be engaged. And that was going to be my next question, is while you're focused on learning at Michigan State, you really have to dig deep into the early education
right.
process of what's being delivered to Michigan State, I would assume.
Yeah, well, we do think about that. I mean, and my children are the best test case, too. When Luana was talking, I was thinking about a conversation I had in the kitchen with my daughter last night, which was about the fact that she's uncomfortable in a learning environment right now because she lots of things come easy to her, and now things are not coming easy to her. She's having to work really hard, and she doesn't like that. And I said, well, I got to tell you, as a teacher and a parent, I'm thrilled, which is not what she wanted to hear.
Right.
But Luana's right. I mean, students come to us shaped heavily by the experience that they're having in K-12. And those experiences are fairly passive in terms of too many of their learning experiences are passive. And I don't mean to beat up K-12 teachers. I continue to work with K-12 writing teachers, and that's been an amazing part of my own learning experience as a teacher. But the system that they're in, heavily focused on assessments, lots of top-down management of K-12 schools right now, means that they're a little overly focused on assessments and content delivery. So when they come to us, our students are expecting to sit in that classroom and be told what's on the exam, to be very exam-driven in their approach to learning, to be very passive in that classroom experience. And that time, that 50 minutes or 75 minutes when you have, you know, 25 human beings in there with a teacher and technology, that's an expensive 50 or 75 minutes. Right. Unbelievably expensive period of time. So we have to make it an exceptionally valuable period of time. And my version of that is we have that's a space of collisions and activity, of, you know, flipped classrooms, you know, is a notion that I think most people are familiar with. We make that very valuable because it's very expensive. And then we offload some of the more passive content delivery moments to other moments.
I think that, you know, flipped classrooms are sort of become, even in K-12, a physical issue. We just, right. You know, put the teacher, we put people at little group desk with a computer and not with a teacher with rows right. in front of them. And therefore, we flipped right. the piece. This is really fundamentally changing and turning upside down the learning model yeah. about what happens in a classroom and what happens outside of the classroom yeah. and how we're going to do this to scale. And and part of what Jeff was able to develop in his entrepreneur self was how do we think about professional writing major? How do we think about writing in a digital environment more before it was fashionable?
Right.
Because it's not just about 144 characters. It's about thoughts and connections and ways of communicating that elicits response, not just as sort of the delete button on a mm-hmm. on a piece of information on your phone. Mm-hmm. And I think that creativity is important. But there, you've got a nucleus of faculty here, or just maybe more than you want, coming to the Innovation Hub after this is its second year, but its first real year of functioning.
Yeah, let me talk about that. I think hopefully the listeners will be interested in this. So we have a brand new entity on campus that I was charged with developing, which is the Hub for Innovation and Learning and Technology. And we just moved into our physical space a week ago. And we've been in a fairly quiet year of building a team and building a culture and building an approach to how we think innovation will work on this campus. And the short version of what we've been tasked to do is to help MSU reinvent itself as a learning institution. And the way to measure this innovation group is MSU a different learning institution in a couple of years than it is now? If it is, then we're having some success. And if it isn't, we're not. And we may need to rethink what we're doing.
And we can point to the neighborhoods. I mean, if you look at the engagement numbers from the Wall Street Journal, there's a lot of indication that the neighborhoods, the way in which we're taking a very diverse set of folks mm-hmm. who are mostly from Michigan, so they're mostly from this top-down mm-hmm. learning environment, and moving them into a different way. The numbers are very positive, so we're building from strength. And part of this is sort of, if you're thinking about the future and how we can prepare students for this 21st century, where the clock dilemma will be profound for them as changes occur around them. Mm-hmm. And they have to have a different way of acquiring knowledge or pieces of information and using it in ways that were never, I think, envisioned in at least in my lifetime. And so we talk about speed, but it really is just a clock dilemma to solve. There's also then how we sustain the fabric of a society when you could go off and be autonomized by your phone and the people in your phone, mm-hmm. and not really be connected with things around you. And you see that more and more as people walk around campus and they don't say anything to anybody around them. They just sort of stare at their phone.
Right.
And so that those things are okay. We're not going to say don't do that, but they've got to be connected to a broader piece in order to educate what are going to be the global citizen leaders, citizen scholars for the future, which is our role as a flagship university, a flagship public university. And so it's going to be really fascinating mm-hmm. to watch this. But I'm also watching the digital environment. Now, right now, when Jeff, you started and talked with me about this idea about digital writing, mm-hmm. okay, and we can make a company about digital writing, all these ideas that you had eons ago now, it was really out of sync with the world.
Yeah,
I mean,
nobody
believed that you could do professional writing in a digital environment and make it real mm-hmm. and make it serious writing mm-hmm. and stand the test of writing with my pencil in a different way. And now it's the same kind of challenge moving forward, and people accept that as just a really good thing to do.
Yeah, they do. It's been, I mean, my contention, the question my grandpa always asked me was, son, would you rather be lucky or good? And the answer was lucky.
Yeah.
And I was just born at the right time with regard to my interest in writing and technology, because nothing has been more exponentially powerful or good for the place, role, and meaning of writing in our lives than the computer braided with a network. We write more now than we've written in any generation in human history. So computers and computer networks, the handheld devices we have, which we used to call phones, but are really writing technologies as much as anything else, the proliferation of writing in all of our lives in ways that most people don't really recognize. I was just born at the right time to recognize that this was a growth opportunity, and it has been.
So you and I are talking 5 years from now. What would you like to see happen 5 years from now?
At Michigan State?
Yeah.
I would like to see an important cultural shift, I think, in terms of how faculty and students understand their relationships with each other and with regard to learning and with regard to teaching. And I would like to see that cultural shift to be one in which we have created much more inclusive learning environments on this campus. So the increasingly diverse students who come to us recognize that this is a home for them mm-hmm. and that this is a place which will care for them, and that that they can join this community of scholars and see this the world that they're entering as a part of their world. I'd like to see those a much more caring and rigorous learning experience for students, so that they understand when they come to this campus that they're going to be turned on their ear, that this is going to change their lives, and that this campus is committed to changing their lives for the better. And I would like to see us be widely recognized as leading the pack with regard to wise, careful, and effective use of learning technologies, and the effective use of learning analytics so that we make really strong evidence-based decisions about what we teach and how we teach and where we teach it. And the last thing about that culture, which I think would be really important, is that we are very risk-tolerant with regard to the experiments that we're willing to engage in and our ability to learn from them quickly. So we see learning experiences on this campus that aren't just 15 weeks and aren't just 3 credits, that they use time and space in very creative ways so that students recognize that to come to East Lansing is to come to a special place.
I think what's different about us in that view is that it's not our intent to make it a separate part of the university called Technology Inc.
Right.
Or Technology Global, or whatever words you want to put on it.
Right.
We will do online learning and everything else that goes with it and grow that, quote, online learning piece.
Mm-hmm.
It is our intent to have more people succeed at a higher standard.
Right.
By using and changing this, the neighborhoods were a part of it. We're sort of growing into this, and have this combination of rigor and caring, which becomes a genuine MSU environment, the teaching and learning environment, and do it at scale. Because
scale.
Socrates did a really good job of it on the log,
mm-hmm.
And you know there are some very small places that when they have 400 total in their freshman class, can in fact do that at a relatively good level.
Yeah.
But we need for America's success, for the world's success, for Michigan's success to do it at scale.
I
and
think,
that's really the sort of the issue we're struggling with.
I mean, it's never too late to learn, they always say.
Right. It's never
and
too late to learn.
Professors, faculty,
right.
Teaching assistants, coaches, yeah. assistant coaches. You even see this going on to, you know, outside of campus, of the learning continuing for those that are employing these students that are coming off campus, of getting the maximum you can out of them is going to require that you at least understand, if not learn, that process.
Yeah, and I think the needs for learning are so pervasive and are going to continue. I mean, one of the interesting opportunities for Michigan State is to become a lifelong learning resource for Spartans everywhere. And this is where computer networks and digital technologies will allow us to reach Spartans wherever they are in the world. And that's an opportunity that would be an interesting one to mm-hmm. truly push on, is to become that lifelong learning resource for them. But that requires us to be nimble and flexible right. in a way that we haven't had to be, but we might consider it in the future.
I think part of it is, again, the scaling question.
Yeah.
I mean, because there, if you talk to the alums that came back last weekend, many of them were a lifelong learning opportunity for them. Or we do it in a content base mm-hmm. For business graduates or whatever. But we don't necessarily, if you're a business graduate, help you with questions about child development
right.
and that you might encounter, or right. how to think about learning analytics as you look at testing. And that makes a whole person, not just a better business person.
Right.
And that's really, I think, the trick about how we want to move forward, because we are doing a lot of this stuff already, but it's in these pods that are good, but not with the connectivity and the tissue mm-hmm. that make it sort of agile and flexible.
Yep.
And people can create their own module of learning by deciding I need this piece, and this piece, and pushing that together in a way that it is more customized for you mm-hmm. and not just our program.
Right.
And those are going to be really exciting times. And we're sort of an outlier in thinking about it that way, as opposed to thinking about putting online courses mm-hmm. or MOOCs.
Yeah, that's true. And the MOOC moment has been an interesting moment, and we've experimented and we've participated. But as anybody who knows what's happened, they've pulled back dramatically from their radical claims for upending higher education as we know it. And that was predictable. I mean, anybody who looked at what they were doing knew that they weren't focused on learning at all. But that doesn't mean that what we learned from that moment isn't serviceable and usable. I think there were a tremendous number of smart people. And one of the things I'm interested in is picking up what we learned from that moment and repackaging and rethinking it in an MSU way and making it useful for us as we engage the world.
Well, we're so excited to have you as a part of Michigan State. The team you're putting together on the hub is not only impressive but growing.
It's growing.
And I think people will see the impact of this not in a isolated part about Michigan State, but throughout the way in which we do learning across the campus.
I hope so.
Thanks for joining us.
Yeah,
thank
it was a
you,
pleasure. Thanks
yeah.
for having me.
That was MSU's Associate Provost for Teaching, Learning, and Technology, Jeff Grable, talking with Michigan State University President Luana K. Simon and Spartans Athletic Director Mark Hollis. To hear the conversation again, please visit SpartanPodcast.com. This is MSU Today on AM 870 WKAR.
She's up all night till the sun. I'm up all night to get some. She's up all night for good fun. I'm up all night to get
WKAR.
Hello, I'm Mike Winkle, Executive Director of the Michigan Potato Industry Commission. Michigan-grown potatoes are well known as a nutritious, sustainably produced option for families and businesses. As the nation's eighth largest potato state, it's also easy for families in Michigan to buy potatoes that were grown right here in our state. This year, Michigan potato growers are working hand-in-hand with Cultivate Michigan, a program developed to encourage local sourcing of Michigan produce. Through Cultivate Michigan, businesses like food service providers and institutions that include schools and hospitals have access to more information on how to source Michigan-grown produce. Every year, Cultivate Michigan selects four new seasonal foods to feature. The program promotes these foods in a variety of ways to food buyers. Food buyers interested in using more Michigan products at their institutions can sign up directly through Cultivate Michigan to buy locally. For Michigan potato growers, the program has provided a way to tell our story to businesses statewide. And it's helping to link Michigan potato growers with institutions that are able to buy a large number of potatoes while ensuring that they're growing right here in Michigan. That's why it's great to have potatoes in the Cultivate Michigan spotlight in 2016. For more information, go to mipotato.com.
MSU AgBio Research is really centered around leading research and developing scientific discoveries in the areas of food, energy, and environment.
Doug Bueller leads MSU AgBio Research.
Our history bases us in Michigan, but we've really expanded that mission to the nation and to the world.
MSU AgBio Research has more than 300 scientists representing seven MSU colleges.
We're very interested in continuing to build international linkages because of the importance of what we do and the global nature of agriculture and the global nature of a lot of the problems that we currently face.
MSU AgBio Research is leading research and scientific discoveries in the areas of food, energy, and the environment in Michigan, the nation, and around the world.
The core is that we do research on food, energy, and agriculture. The reality is that those three things are important to everybody every day of their life.
Visit agbioresearch.msu.edu.
This is Jim Byram, president of the Michigan Agribusiness Association. It's especially troubling to agriculture these days during this election season to hear everyone bashing trade, from both presidential candidates to many congressional candidates. Across the board, trade all of a sudden has become a negative. But for agriculture, without trade, we don't have any place to sell what we produce. There's those that believe that we ought to consume what we grow here. Well, that's true. However, we grow a whole lot more here and produce a whole lot more here than we can ever consume. Without trade, agriculture suffers. In fact, without trade, our competitors are going to be eating our lunch literally around the world. All you have to do is look 90 miles off the southern coast of the United States in Cuba. Just this past week, the Chinese government signed 33 commercial agreements with the Cubans. They're 90 miles away. It's a classic example why we have to have trade agreements. NAFTA, been a sterling and remarkable success as we look at what we've been able to export to Canada, export to Mexico, such things as black beans, fruit crops to Canada, all across the board. Without trade, we suffer. And if we don't embrace trade agreements, if we don't look at the TPP, the harm that's being caused with our relationships just because of the negative rhetoric with NAFTA is actually unconscionable. We have great trading partners. If we don't have trade, others will fill the void. We've seen it happen around the world time and again, and this rhetoric is already hurting our standing around the world when we deal with trade and our existing trading partners. We have to change the rhetoric. We have to change the tone. And for agriculture especially, we have to trade.
WKAR. Thank you for listening to MSU Today on AM 870 WKAR. To hear the show again, click on the radio tab at WKAR.org and scroll to MSU Today every Sunday afternoon at 4 o'clock on AM 870 WKAR.